Back in November 2017, I spent the month in Jerusalem as part of a sabbatical. And one of the great treasures of Jerusalem is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And it's a very odd kind of creation, as so many old churches are, that have been kind of added onto and changed over the years. And the central kind of place is the place of the tomb and the place of the resurrection, and then of course the place of Calvary, which are, there's one place called the place of the women, where you're able to sit and observe both places at once. But at that time, there were so many pilgrims who were there. It was just this press of people constantly moving and trying to gain access, particularly into the Holy Sepulchre, the tomb itself, because it's such a small space that only a couple of people are able to be in there at any one time. You kind of have to crawl in to get there. And I had lined up to try and get in, and I just wasn't able to find my way. And one of the other priests on the program said, "Oh, well, you can actually stay overnight at the Holy Sepulchre. There's only like 6 or 8 people are allowed on any given night to stay there." And he said, "Well, I've gone through the application process, and I've been given these 4 tickets. You know, would you like to come?" And I was like, "Sure, that would be amazing to be able to be there when there's not all of the press of the crowds and everybody there." And I was really anticipating this. We went through the whole kind of ceremony that happens at the beginning with the handover, because you get the 3 kind of Christian groups that are there, the Eastern Catholics, the Roman Catholics, and the Orthodox, who are all there. And there's this big kind of ceremony, very simple, of the key being kind of handed over to a Muslim man, who then goes outside and locks the door, and so we're sealed in for the night. And I thought, great, I'll be able to go to the tomb now. But first, first, you've got all of the workers who come, all of the women who come to change the oil in the lamps. And that takes about 1.5 hours or 2 hours. So you're kind of sitting there watching as all of these people are busy polishing and cleaning and doing all of this work. And you're just like, and they're making so much noise in the process. And it's just this frustrating experience. So I was trying to find somewhere that was quiet to pray while I, waiting for them to go. And I thought, well, maybe up at the place of Calvary. But no, there were people there changing the oil in the lamps, and people who are there setting up scaffolding and doing the work of restoration that can only happen late at night over this course. But eventually, after a couple of hours of waiting, we're eventually able to get into that place. And it's very beautifully lit with all these lamps kind of burning. And it really brought to mind, the significance of the lamps. The lamps are such a crucial thing. When we've got electricity, we just presume we can flick the light on, or, and if you're like me, you have everything on timers and all these smart devices that just turn on at sunset and all of those kinds of things. But no, you need the oil in the lamps. And that pattern that we hear of the wedding celebration, that was continued to be practiced through to today in the Levant, in all of those kinds of areas and regions. The people still have a celebration of the wedding that doesn't just happen over the course of a few hours. It's usually over the course of a whole week. And the bridegroom will make the most of that. It's always to be presumed that the bridegroom will be running late. That it's not the bride who's running late, as in our tradition and custom, it's the bridegroom who makes his way through the village, and everyone is wanting to be part of this celebration. In fact, the rabbis said that it was one of those times when a devout man could set aside the study of the law to take part in the celebration of the wedding. So this sense of this whole anticipation of this beautiful celebration. And so it was to be presumed that you would need extra oil. It wasn't something that was unexpected, that the bridegroom would be running late. In fact, there were often games that were kind of played in order to see how late could the bridegroom be, and could he catch all of the bridesmaids in this unexpected kind of way. And so the fact that 5 of them have just come with their lamps without any extra oil is indeed a very foolish kind of thing to do. They haven't done that preparation. Because the lamps are about, or the oil is about, that sense of what we've made our lives to be. The way we build up our characters over the course of our lives. And it's about that sense of how do I live well? How do I actually change the way that I am in the world to be the kind of person that is able to respond at any given moment to the need that is directly there in front of me? That the oil is inviting us into this slow transformation. It's not about a works righteousness. It's not about just doing more things in order to be worthy of God. But about this sense that what is the purpose of all of this? It's to join in the feast. It's to join in the celebration. And if in that process we can recognize this little need that can begin to make me, to change my character, to be more likely to respond to that situation. And psychologically, we know that that's the way that we're shaped and formed. That by doing these little projects, by doing these little actions, and choosing well in any given moment, that we're much more likely to choose well when the situation demands it. So the oil needs to be brought up. The oil stock needs to continually be refilled by our experience of God, by our opening ourselves into the wonder of God's love, by letting God continue to call us more deeply into that life and into that fullness. So today it's this call and a reminder that all of us have to respond personally. It's not enough to rely on somebody else's good works. We can't just presume that our parents and their prayers and their good works will get us through into the life of eternity. No, God only has children. He doesn't have any grandchildren. Every single one of us have to respond in our own way to the wonder of what God is doing. And why? Because we all want to be part of that celebration. And it's not about just this sense of doing the right thing in order to live a life of drudgery and boredom. It's about this invitation to the feast, this invitation to the celebration, this invitation to the wonder of what God is preparing. And so the wisdom that we require is that right choice that we make in every moment of our life, slowly being changed, slowly being transformed by the way that we experience God, by our encounters with His mercy, by the time that we spend in prayer, so that we are changed to be the kind of people that naturally just bring the oil of good works into our lives, and we're able to share that with those around us. And we're all able then to join in the celebration of life, to be at the wedding feast, and to allow others to also experience